Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers, a longtime guest in my channel. Way back from many years ago, we've talked about Tesla investing over the years, and it's been a while since I invited Emmett back on the channel. So I wanted to catch up, see what he's up to, get his latest thoughts on investing in general, any kind of interesting spots, Tesla, AI, full self-driving, and kind of catch up with Emmett. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dave. Yeah, we've known each other a while, and I mean, we've had a lot of ups and downs together with the Tesla stock, and you know, I feel like our friendship over the years started with that, but we expanded and talked about many other things. So, yeah, we haven't touched base publicly in a long time, and I'm sure I always on X and stuff. I'm sure you get it too. Like people are like, "Oh, when are you guys going to chat again?" When you get, but there's really, I feel like there's so many great, you know, armchair analysts out there. Like maybe that was a role I played for a little while, but there's so many great people. You know, my time was sort of like a flash in the pan of being useful, I feel like. And now I'm sort of just, you know, an average Tesla. I know more than 99% of people, but of the people on X, there's so many people that know more than me at this point. It's like not as useful to have me. Yeah.
Well, I still think you give a unique angle. I appreciate actually your views over the years, and I'm curious to hear an update on a lot of things. Like for example, update on your views on Tesla, FSD, also kind of options, but also where you're looking in investing, kind of what's your overall strategy. But first let's go and let's, I kind of want to paint a stroke and first kind of do the bigger picture of kind of AI and investing kind of trends that you might be interested in, and then we'll go into more kind of specific with Tesla and other stuff. So overall, is there anything kind of investing wise like that has interested you or you've noticed has changed? Have you been rethinking a framework for investing, you know, with all that's going on? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this whole NVIDIA craze has woken me up to, you know, I mean, ChatGPT, the large language models, all this stuff, and just like the GPU chip they provide seems to be massive, made them the largest company in the world now. And so you have to kind of realize that. And I feel like the whole, the some of the big companies, Google, Meta, I put Amazon sort of in there too, and definitely NVIDIA and Tesla. You know, these companies, you don't know, I feel like I don't know which one's going to really break away and like become like some runaway giant of a behemoth if it discovers and figures out AGI first, for example, or somehow has some step change in technology from, you know, their clusters of GPUs or something. So I have a portion of my wealth in like that whole basket. Obviously, I have a huge amount in Tesla still, but I also have a basket of those stocks as well, just kind of seeing if one really breaks away to suddenly, you know, do some special things.
Have you changed your allocation in your personal investment portfolio over the past year or so?
Yeah, I mean, my personal investment portfolio, I have like my IRA account. I know we've talked about, you know, how I had that big IRA account that grew into something special, and I've sort of diversified some of that one to some degree. To a lot of different things. I've made a lot of private investments and in, you know, SPVs or some Elon Musk companies and such. And I've also put some of it into my fund and then some of it into like an allocation of very like risk averse S&P 500, you know, valuation, you know, stocks that are, you know, the opposite of what I'm drawn to personally. But I feel like if I'm wrong personally, those stocks have done well when the growth stocks do bad, you know, historically. Mm-hmm. And it's done well for the last few years for me. So in my IRA account, it's been a little more diversified. But my personal taxable account is still, you know, very, very heavily Tesla. You know, the tax consequences every time I've trimmed down some of those positions has been enormous living in California and such. So I really do believe in Tesla long term. And so, you know, most of my taxable net worth is in Tesla stock still.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah, I'm curious, like, what's your take on investing in AI? If you think, like, how do you think AI is going to impact, you know, the world? And where are the investment opportunities? Like, yeah, how are you kind of looking at that?
I don't know yet. I think there's a lot of uncertainty of how it will play out. It just seems there's some kind of real fast forward progress going on. And NVIDIA has jumped up a lot, and I think a lot of these Magnificent Seven stocks, they call, or a lot of them are AI focused in a large to a large degree. So I think some of these very large, like mega cap stocks, Microsoft's one of those actually too. So Microsoft, has such a stranglehold on OpenAI or closed AI, whatever you want to call it now. And I just think we don't know where it's going to come from, but I do feel like there's going to be some kind of like, there could be some kind of like runaway AI event that isn't necessarily bad for humanity. It could be bad, like, people are worried about, but if it's good for humanity, I would like to have a piece of one of the company that, handles that runaway AI, if that makes sense. Does that?
Got it. So one of the, are you looking at one of the top Magnificent Seven or whatever as a well, there's possibility. So that's why you're kind of holding a basket of those stocks.
Yeah, exactly. So I had like this, like kind of like account on the side that was for harvesting tax losses. It was like a S&P 500 arbitrage, tax arbitrage account. It wasn't like an ar it was just like for harvesting losses, but I wound that down, and I've kept all those large positions in it, and of the large, Magnificent Seven, and I'm just holding on to those long term as long as
I
I
see.
can. And I sell some covered calls on them and have to buy some back occasionally at a loss, but for the most part, that's that. I'm holding that basket kind of just separate. Just because I don't know if and when one of those companies really breaks out and has some new technology. Do you think one of those companies is likely most likely to kind of have some breakaway technology benefit from this or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm skeptical that, I mean, I think like the large companies are set up well because the cost to train these AI models are going to increase. So you're looking at probably, I think, $1 billion the supposedly the large AI models are going to cost next year to train, and then maybe $5 to $10 billion in 2 to 3 years. So the people, the companies who are able to train those models, they're not that many because you need $5, $10 billion in extra cash laying around that you could just, spend. And there's not many companies that can do 5, 10, eventually 20, 30, whatever, $40 billion to train these models. And so, but yeah, I mean, I think Microsoft is well positioned, Google is well positioned, Facebook is well positioned. Apple has their devices, so, I think they'll do fine. NVIDIA will do fine with their GPUs, but I don't know if that's where the, I mean, I think it, to me, I mean, I think in our, one of our last chats, or I was talking about the NASDAQ as a decent investment overall when it was like, under 11,000 because of basically this, that you have great tech companies as the center of NASDAQ, right? And so I think it's a generally like decently, moderate, risk, but high, I would say moderate risk, moderate reward. Maybe low to moderate risk, moderate reward. But you're not gonna like, I don't know. I think holding a basket is gonna be tough to 5x or 10x, one's portfolio in 10 or 15 years. I don't know.
I agree with that. And I think, yeah, I think what maybe what I'm hearing is that, like, instead of that basket of five or six stocks, if you just hold the whole NASDAQ, index, you'll still get the benefit of one of those stocks really jumping out of the, of the woodwork. But also you cover a lot of other bases of all these other potential companies that could have some unimaginable, return on some AI discovery they benefit from.
Personally, I've been doing this like mad rush into coding with AI. And so for the past 3 months, I've been doing this crazy 10 hours a day coding with AI.
Oh
And
my gosh.
it's not coding like just random stuff. It's actually I'm working on kind of some core education apps for my kids that hopefully I can share with some other people and hopefully it'll help people. But yeah, it's quite amazing what AI can do right now, but it's so frustrating too because it just can't do everything I want it to do, but it can do so much. And as I dive into this, like it makes me think like where's the potential? Where's 'cause sometimes I'm drawn to early opportunities that I see, and I keep on thinking about this every couple of days, where I'm like, the opportunity with AI is like 100 times or 1,000 times bigger than the App Store opportunity that I experienced 15 years ago. Like, that provided kind of the whole initial capital that, you know, my wife and I needed to invest and do things later. But this AI opportunity, I think, is 100, 1,000 times or greater of an opportunity. But the question is, where is that opportunity? And I don't know why I'm finding myself coding. You know, I'm coding with AI all day long. Like, throughout the night, I'm like thinking about it. I wake up early in the morning, like, I start coding with AI, and I'm not even a coder. It's like, I don't even have interest in coding. You know, I've never really liked it, you know? And yet I'm doing it like day and night for the past like 3 months straight. And I go, there's something, there's got to be something there. I don't know why, you know?
There's just a variety of things you're coding. I saw that like little video game you did with the dogs hugging the cats or kittens or whatever. That was cool.
Yeah.
But have you done other things? I'm sure you've done other things like education stuff or what, like,
yeah.
What
are some big thing was an interactive personalized math app for my kids.
Okay.
So the thing is, like, you know, in a week or two, you can get something, you know, basic going, but it takes like a while to get it where it's really good, where like they really love it. And it's good. And so that took that, and I'm still working on that. And then, the past like two weeks, I've been working on a singing app because my 6 year old daughter wants to sing, and every singing app that, or wants to learn how to really sing, but every singing app, it just is not good. She's not learning enough. And so I decided to make something that actually catches the pitch and tells you if you're off tune or not, and gives you like a complete analysis of your singing that song, and it gives you a score and how to improve. And it's different than anything out there because it's just so accurate and it's just so precise.
Publish these things on like on a website or something. I bet a lot of people would like to use this stuff probably.
Yeah. So so I'm pivoting actually a lot of my efforts into education personally. So I've had this app company that I've just kind of put on the back burner. It's just been going, and I've been spending a couple hours a week on, you know, just maintaining it. We have a few developers, you know, but I'm pivoting everything to education, where I think that's where a huge opportunity is, like personalized education using AI. And so we've been prototyping a bunch of stuff over the past year, but this just the past 3 months, I've been doing it myself. Like, before I would have developers do it, but now I'm like doing it.
You just tell, and you're using Claude or is that what you're using?
Yeah, I started out with GPT-4, but then it moved to Claude, and now it's like 99% Claude. And it's their middle model. I don't know if you're following. There's a new middle model called Sonnet, and their top model is called Opus.
Oh. Yeah, I'm using Opus, I think, but they have a Sonnet
Opus 3, and they just came out with Sonnet 3.5. But this middle model is like better than their top model because they haven't updated their top model yet. It's coming, but it's like
maybe that's what I'm using too. I don't know, but it's really good.
I spent just coding. Like, I use the developer console for Claude. I spent like $1,500 in 1 month in AI credits to code, because that's how much coding I'm doing with AI.
When you're coding, you're like asking it to create a code for you in this particular language, and then you take that and input it into the engine or whatever. I feel like it's just a step away from just saying, hey, can you like Claude or Sonnet or whatever, just automatically in the backbone having all that stuff built into it. And you're just saying, can you make this for me? And it'll just make it for you like a magic genie.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's starting to – they're starting to add that where it can run stuff and show you. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon it's going to be able to run stuff and find the bugs and fix the bugs. And you don't have to prompt it, and it can run software. But it's still not there. It's still going to take a while. It's interesting because I sometimes tell my kids, like, why am I coding myself with AI when in 1 or 2 years, AI is going to be like 10 or 100 times better? You know, it's like what I did in like a week, I could do like an hour or two. Like, why am I wasting my time like this? And my kids, they respond and they say, you're gaining an experience where you're understanding kind of how to work with AI and understanding its weaknesses and strengths, so you're going to be able to use AI better than other people in a year or two.
Wow.
You know, so I mean,
that's very insightful.
I hope that's true.
It's true, but
Anyways, it's just it's interesting. I don't know what to make out of all this stuff, but
I wonder what Grok, the next Grok is going to be like with X.AI. All this fundraising they did. They're going to build this huge, like, you know, data center in Tennessee apparently, and it's just going to be bigger than anything else. And I wonder what. You know, I think that's going to be a lot of it's going to be used for Grok, right? Grok 2.0 or whatever it is. So I wonder what that's going to be like.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine, because like, Elon knows how much this stuff costs. So if you spend like, you know, $100 million will get you like a GPT-4 level. Like, but if you spend $1 billion, you're going to be at, you know, GPT 4.5-ish, you know, maybe close to 5 level. And so Elon's thinking that over the next year, probably. And then after that, it just goes higher. And so, yeah, I think if you spend the money and you have the right people on your team, I think you're going to get to that level. But then the question is, what if everybody has those level AI? You know, you have the OpenAIs and the Anthropics. You have, these, you know, Microsoft's or Google's Gemini and all these other guys, you know, Grok's AI, you have like five, let's say, you know, that all are similar, spending $1 billion, eventually $10 billion. Eventually, I think they're either going to drop out a few, so you have like two or three winners, or they're going to specialize in some angle that only that they're the best at. And that's, you're going to have maybe some type of specialization of the large language models, you know? But we'll see. I mean, I think Tesla's contribution is interesting, in my opinion, because they're not in the rat race for the large language models. They're kind of in a category up by themselves with what they're calling real world, you know, physical AI. Yeah. And that AI is more vision focused and it's more real time. And it's a different architecture. And it's a different angle. It's almost like a completely, like these LLMs started from text. But Tesla started from images, and it's a completely different approach. Eventually, they're going to be able to do similar things in different ways. Like, I think that LLMs will be able to do a lot of video stuff and eventually be able to drive in some way capacity. But I don't think it'll be able to drive as well as if you take from a video first approach. Like, it's just, you get so much more... it's like lower latency, faster processing, like all that stuff means a lot in driving. You can't be late. Yeah. Like, you know, there's a half a second glitch, you know, and it's like, you're gone, you know? It's like all that stuff is important. So I think
Stakes
Tesla's, in that way, I think Tesla's, eventually you're going to probably have a couple at the very top that can do everything, LLMs, and then you'll have, you know, three or four, probably, or five big one companies that are doing specialized takes. Right. But we'll see. Yeah. I mean, what's your kind of take on kind of Tesla's contribution to AI and FSD and all this?
Yeah, I agree with you that the real world AI, Tesla's got the most data and far ahead, and the self-driving cars are, you know, the what we all know. But I think the humanoid robot, as you've talked about in some of your recent videos, too, is really the biggest opportunity of all. You know, like, we've talked about this before and you've talked about it. I've talked, you know, everyone's talked about it, but you know, the humanoid robot doesn't have to be 99.9999%, you know, accurate all the time, like a full self-driving car does. Right. So this humanoid robot could just be 99% accurate and throwing a football with you back and forth or picking up tennis balls on the tennis court or whatever. So it's just, I think it's going to come fast to market. And, you know, it sounds like they're using him in the factory already for Tesla. I wonder if Tesla's even going to sell them. Like, he's talked about in the past, like, oh, it'll cost this much, but I feel like they'll be so useful. Why would Tesla, in Tesla's own, you know, monetary incentive, why would they sell it? Why wouldn't they just lease them out to people, you know, and just forever collect like a dividend on all these robots? I'm curious how that model is going to work. I mean, if they sell them, I'm certainly buying a bunch of them, a few of them at least, you know, so, and I think a lot of us will. So I think that's the, that's like 2 to 4 years away from when we start like seeing them in use cases, maybe 1 or 3 years away. I don't know, 1 to 2 years, maybe in more factories, but 2 to 4 years before I think us consumers actually can see use cases for them in our lives. What are your thoughts about that stuff?
So I had this idea or this, there's something called like crossing the chasm, and it's like this concept where with new tech products, you have to cross into the mainstream. Early adopters love it and all this stuff, but in order to jump across the chasm into mainstream, the product has to be like so well-rounded, so easy to use, such a no-brainer in terms of value proposition that it could, cross into the mainstream, which are people who don't really care about these like, early adopter features. They just care about, if it does it work for them. And so with Optimus, I was thinking like, okay, how does Optimus cross into the chasm, cross over the chasm? How does it get mainstream? And I'm thinking it's got to be, I think, through its sheer usefulness. It's just going to get to a point where it's so useful with so many things that it's just like, you just can't not have one, but in order to get that point, you're going to have I think you're going to have a decent sized early adopter period where the robot does some really cool things, but it just isn't enough to convince the mainstream person. It just isn't enough cool things or useful things, right? Like it could do like, oh, get me a Coke out of my, refrigerator, do X and Y and Z and all this stuff. And it's cool for the early adopter, but for the mainstream person, they're like, what? Why am I going to spend $20,000 or $30,000 on that, right? But if it gets to the point where it's like, oh no, your robot can farm your backyard and make into crazy multi-level like farming crazy thing by itself, and tend to it and give you all your food from your backyard, right? And cook your food, then it's like mainstream's gonna be like, oh my gosh, who can't live without that? You know what I'm saying? Like it's gonna take a big jump in usefulness. So that period of where the robot is gaining usefulness, but it's not as useful as what it needs to be to cross the chasm, the question mark is how long is that period going to be? Is it going to be like, a 1 to 5 year thing or longer or shorter? And a lot of that depends on how fast Tesla can move, how fast AI progresses. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely probably going to be one of the wildest things to see, I think,
Yeah, I'm excited. I think sometime in the next like 12 months, we'll probably see some more material, announcement, I would think, about the newest Optimus or something from Elon and the team there, about it's just sort of going to get us closer and closer. But I think the generalized approach, like you said, initially it'll be specialized, good at really specialized, whether it's like the last foot automated robotaxi deliveries. That'll be like an initial use case or factories. But I think once it gets more generalizable for doing whatever you want, like building the garden in your backyard, that's amazing, or cooking all kinds of meals and all that stuff, that's like next level where everyone is going to want one.
What's your take on the Robotaxi August 8th event? Do you think they'll just release a vehicle, or is Tesla getting ready to, release the Robotaxi network in a few areas, like test areas? Like, what's your take?
I think the market is anticipating, lots of us investors are anticipating that heavily. And realistically, I'm not sure. I think they'll at least showcase the app for the Tesla network and how it works. Maybe they'll announce a couple initial cities where they're going to pilot this program, I would think. And maybe even in China. Maybe it'll be China and a couple cities in the US at the same time. I'm not sure, but I think they're moving fast in China, supposedly. So that's my hopes, and I think that would be great. And they'll unveil the new vehicle design for the robotaxi, it sounds like. But also, I think the stock, a lot of this run up recently, people are getting excited about it. And we've been around long enough to know that after every like big product announcement, no matter how amazing we think of it as like long-term investors, I think people need to be careful of the stock. Like it may or may not go up after the 8.8, and even if it meets all your wildest expectations, the stock might just tank 10 or 20% just because it seems to do that a lot after the Cybertruck unveiling or whatever kind of product announcements they've had in the past. You know, Optimus, Battery Day, remember, it dropped significantly. But as long-term investors, you kind of get excited about these things, and I think it's still good. But just there's a lot of people that, you know, follow me and try to do short-term stock option trades all the time. And so I would just throw wind of caution in the air. There's just, you just don't know what the stock will do though.
Yeah. I mean, stock price, like I was thinking the other day, what are the similarities and differences of this kind of stagnant stock price, this kind of, you know, low high, that's range bound Tesla stock.
Mm-hmm. Range bound. Yeah.
Yeah. In this past few years compared to, let's say, you know, 2016 to 19 or so, right? Maybe 2015 to 19.
15, yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's also another period that most people aren't going to be familiar with, but it's like from like 2000. Like 11
to 12
to like 2012 or 13, early 2013, like about April or May-ish, Tesla was range bound that whole time too. So there's kind of like three range bound periods of Tesla. You have the early first stage, you know, second stage. First stage was, let's say, 2010 to 13. Then you had probably like 15 to 19. And now you have like this other stage, you know, it's like
21 to now.
Now, like, do you see any similarities or differences between, let's say, this stage and the last stage?
Very similar. Yeah, very similar. You just don't know how long it'll last. Like the last stage, 2015 and 2019, it just went on beyond belief, right? I mean, we're on like the Tesla Motor Club forums and everyone's talking about, like, you were putting videos out regularly towards the end of that. And, you know, we all thought, like, look, they're producing the Model 3. Oh, it's not going to be at a profit, blah, 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 blah. Eventually, they produce at a profit and the shorts could be, but that was, you know, the difference there was there was so many shorts in Tesla stock, relatively speaking. I'm not saying there's not a lot of shorts now, but relatively speaking to the market cap size of Tesla at the time, when it was 50 billion market cap or 3 billion market cap in 2010 to 2013, like the shorts could really dictate the price to some degree or suppress it. Right now, the shorts, I don't think they can really suppress the stock price. It's just an overall kind of sentiment languish, I think. Like, what have you done for me lately in terms of auto gross margins, that kind of stuff, kind of languishing. And I think because of the shorts not necessarily depressing the price, you know, I think that we can break out sooner, but it won't be, you know, a 5x or 10x sudden, you know, rush. It might be a 2x or maybe a 3x. I don't know, but it would be great to have that sooner than later. And I think a lot of this depends on the storyline, the narrative that Elon has forced on us of not being a behemoth of an EV manufacturer with 30% gross margins to being, okay, Tesla is actually an EV manufacturer on the side, but really it's an AI company. And this is what you should be focused on, you know? So I think as investors overall kind of get used to that new narrative and see it and kind of appreciate it, I think the stock will start rising again in a more steadfast way, hopefully.
Yeah.
That's my guess. What do you think? Do you think there's kind of a narrative change there in the stock too? Or?
Yeah. I mean, when I look at the last kind of range bound period, I remember a lot of the idea or the concept was investors or the stock market wasn't pricing in the growth and the profitability of Tesla. So it was saying, oh, you know, it's like Tesla's not going to be this crazy profitable, you know, like growth company. They're basically a struggling auto company that loses money. Like that was the narrative. It was like, oh, it's losing money, bleeding money. So they lost sight or didn't catch on to the reality that Tesla was prepping this cash cow of Model 3 would cover expenses and Model Y would bring the profits, right? And it would grow. But they refused to believe that until Tesla delivered and showed it, right? And then by that time, it was like, you know, it was like kind of so late. I guess they had suppressed that kind of for so long. And I think this time around, it's similar in the sense that I think the stock market and investors are doing the same thing. They're saying, oh, Tesla's growth days are over. If you hear kind of
As an
this
EV
narrative,
manufacturer,
yeah, it's like, oh, okay, they had this their growth phase and now it's gone. And their profitability too is like it's gone down. Therefore, they're not really a profitable company and they're not growing much. Like it's the same type of narrative as, the last range bound period. And so the longer it gets stuck here with that narrative, it kind of gets wound up where if Tesla can grow and if they can become profitable and growing in their profitability, then you can have this huge rebound, this like re-rating of the stock again. And that's interesting because I don't think many people on Wall Street really believe in Elon's FSD predictions and robotaxi network. Like that's not their specialty, especially on the East Coast. That's unbelievable to think that everyone's gonna be driving around in these like autonomous, taxis or whatever. So yeah, I sometimes think about the folks who did well at the for the last range bound with options at the end of that period, where you kind of like the longer the range, the longer the stock is range bound, if it's going to break out, then the better the opportunity is, like for leverage. But you just don't know the exact timing, so it's like you have to
Don't.
find a way to survive if you're too early, right? You
Yeah. Welcome to my fund. That's still surviving that with that strategy. Exactly. So yeah, you gotta the options, from 2013, I did that 2013 to or 14, 15 to 19 and 2010, 2012. And you're gonna lose a lot for many years until suddenly you don't, right? And you just gotta make sure you have enough of a lifeline to make it to when it rips. So I think that'll happen, but I don't know if it's gonna be like a 10x. It might, like I said, like going from 600 billion to 6 trillion market cap very quickly seems unfathomable to me. More like 600 billion to, 1.5 trillion seems, realistic to me.
I mean, I think a lot depends on if this robotaxi network actually works and it becomes profitable and grows fast. If it does, then it could be really, really interesting. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, a lot of it depends on how fast FSD can improve. I mean, what's your take on the latest versions? Do you have probably 12.3.6 on your car?
I just got that. I think that's worse than the last version, right? Like, what was the last one? 11 point something was, I think, was really good. The last version, this newest version I just got, it's still good, but it like, I have to intervene now because it's too cautious, like going through double stop signs or whatever. Just there's little instances where I'm like, I'm waiting for this next version that Elon's been talking about. I think that's supposed to fix a lot, but it's not dangerous. It's just
Wait,
it was good the last
are you
version.
talking about 12.4.1 did you get, or do you
No,
know if you
I think I
is
had
it?
12.3.6, and I think the version
Okay.
before that was better. Yeah,
Really?
I
Oh,
think that's
okay.
the one. Yeah, I have to
Okay.
double check, but I looked at it yesterday. I'm pretty sure I was like, why is this? Did I get a new update? And it looked like I did. It was like I got 12.3.6 recently. I'm like, oh, maybe I had the 11, maybe a different 12 point before that. I don't know, but there was something recent, recent update that just made it worse. That I feel like a little bit of a regression for me in my area in Northern California, at least. It's not bad. It's just it was much smoother where I could literally just like never touch the wheel for a whole drive. But now it's like if I want to. Unless I want to go really slow to get somewhere and bother some other drivers potentially, then I gotta gonna take over here and there.
What's
What
your
about you? You like the latest version? You're driving the latest version, right? You're on the
One car we have 12.3.6. Actually, it's pretty good. It's like I barely intervene. We have the newest version, 12.4.1. It's only gone out to, I think, to a few hundred cars, but that version is interesting. It's a little different. It's better in some ways, but then sometimes it has some odd things, and I understand why they're waiting for 12.4.2. They have to polish a few things. It's just a few things. Like one thing was on one of my first drives, there was a green light, but the car next to me didn't go on the green light, so my car didn't go. I was like, whoa, weird. It's like it's looking at the other car.
That is
It's like
weird.
before it goes. Just weird stuff. Yeah. What's your take on Cybertruck? How long have you owned a Cybertruck
Oh,
for
I
now?
love the Cybertruck. It's a struggle every day whether I'm driving the self-driving, Model X we have or the Cybertruck. And I love the Cybertruck. It's amazing. The steer-by-wire, it's just like a tank. It's just like the, when it's rained before, it got dry here. When it was raining, the giggle wiper was really amazing. The sound system is impeccable. It's just so comfortable, sitting in. I just like being kind of high up, and it looks crazy. I forget how crazy it looks from the outside a lot now, and just the drive. But I love it because I just love the experience of driving the steer by wire with the, crazy turning radius and the front, fisheye lens on the front bumper is amazing for parking in what you would think would be tight spaces. But now I can like park anywhere in that car, in that truck. So it's crazy. Good. It's their best product yet by far, in my opinion. By far. Like it's definitely worth it. It looks crazy. If you're okay with that for now, until it becomes more mainstream, I say definitely get it. But some people, I think a lot of people just don't want to be, looked at by everyone all the time. And I don't even notice it anymore. I mean, people usually give the thumbs up. Occasionally get a bad reaction once in a while from some old person or something. But most people, 9 out of 10 people love it. Kids, 199 out of, 100 out of 100 kids love it. So I love it too.
I was thinking, why? I mean, I'm saying why, but do you think Tesla should do a SUV version of the Cybertruck?
That'd be neat. Yeah. I mean, I think they could do a lot of cyber, vehicles, the cyber taxi or whatever, the cyber van or cyber SUV. I feel like it could be a whole new style. It's pretty neat. I like the way it looks, but it has to grow on you. Like, when we saw it at the reveal event, you and I and everyone there was like, what is this thing? It took a little while to grow on you. So, but I think it's growing on people who see the Cybertruck regularly. And I think if they had a whole bunch, another line of vehicles with a similar, architecture, it would be pretty cool. What do you think? You think they're going to do that?
I don't know if they'll do it, but I just think that it would sell like double if you do a large SUV
Yeah.
that fits seven, like third row. It looks like a
Yeah.
Cybertruck, a little higher back or something. Like it'll sell double Cybertruck. And
A
then,
lot of people around here buy Rivians for that reason only, just because the Rivian can seat seven people comfortably,
And then if you do a smaller SUV version, that's like a lot cheaper, maybe
Yeah.
30% smaller. Like that would sell like crazy because I mean, people are looking for an affordable, SUV. I mean,
Yeah.
lots of interesting things.
I agree. Yeah. Have you seen a lot of Cybertrucks there in Austin
I see like, one or two per day around where I
I
live.
would think you'd see a lot there, yeah. Are they all silver or are they in different wraps or?
Mostly silver, some wrapped. Black, some other things. I
Yeah.
just wish the Cybertruck would be cheaper, It just
Yeah,
seems like
it'll get
out of
down there.
reach
It's
for almost
expensive.
everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like,
It's as much money as a brand new like Ford F-150, at a dealer that gets marked up at a dealer, right now, which, that's it. But I think it's going to get cheaper. That's just they're selling the Foundation series, which is like the fully optioned Cybertruck. But I think it'll be, 20 or 30,000 cheaper, probably a year from now, I would imagine, once they run through all the Foundation series. So hopefully
Hopefully we can
more.
get like a long range version under 60,000. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. I mean,
Yeah.
it's got to get to this price where it's like it's reachable, attainable, more.
Yeah.
Otherwise
Before
it's going to be
inflation,
more
they
of
could have done it,
a
I feel like.
smaller market.
Before we were hit by years of inflation, they probably could have done it, but we've had such inflation the last 5 years in our economy, so it's probably hard to meet that $50,000 or $60,000 price point. Maybe 65 or 70, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting stuff. Any other kind of stocks you're looking into? I mean, you mentioned the Magnificent Seven, and
Yes.
any other companies or things you're researching or kind of.
I mean, I'm still a fan, big fan of Bitcoin. I still think long term, it could appreciate from here significantly. So I still have some a little Bitcoin. I'm still bullish. But I'm excited about Starlink. Do you think they're going to spin out Starlink as an IPO soon or ever? I mean, I know there's been
Yeah,
talk
I
of that in
mean,
the past.
I know I have mixed feelings about Starlink. I wish if they did an IPO, I wish it would have been earlier so early investors could get more of the appreciation. Because like if you IPO it at a certain later stage, like that, all that appreciation is taken by the early investors, yeah. But then the other thing is, it seems like a very interesting long-term kind of more moderate risk, or maybe low to moderate risk, where it's not a lot of competition in that field, and it's high margins, and it's a great product that just like people need more and more of, internet access. So it just seems like something that over time it would just, grow. It's just like this, it's just a steady kind of, predictable, cash cow of a thing. And so I don't know. It seems like my worry was it would be priced relatively high, because it just makes sense to investors and people, And so you missed out on the early appreciation, and then you have to get in a bit higher. And then, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, SpaceX was just valued at like 210 billion. So, I mean, you got to think the majority of that Starlink valuation, right? I don't know, three quarters of that or so. I don't know. Like, so if they IPO'd, it could be the biggest IPO in history if they did it today, I think. So, but I think it could grow to $1 trillion plus, internet provider, like amazing company, So if they IPO'd it soon, I still think investors could get in and have a nice return over the next several years. But
I was thinking, with SpaceX being valued in the private markets at over 200 billion, it's like Elon probably owns, I think, about almost half of that or so. And so it's like he has probably 100 billion in SpaceX, and if it continues to appreciate, that could be his, like, pretty much, his majority holding. And yeah, it depends on if how Tesla appreciates too and stuff and other stuff. But it's interesting that his that SpaceX has done so well for him. I think the story of Starlink becoming profitable and generating that type of revenue and making SpaceX cash flow positive and all this stuff, it's like an amazing story. Like, before, I think Elon was thinking of bankrolling, SpaceX if he had to, right? But he doesn't have to do that anymore, It's like he doesn't have to sell any Tesla stock, There's like it's a cash flow positive. It's and growing. So yeah, it's
Yeah,
crazy.
he might not ever take any other company public again after all these terrible experiences he's had with Tesla, right? With the Delaware stuff. I feel like he's so bitter. I mean, why I would be too if I was in his position. Why would you want to take any of your other companies public if you don't need to, right? So maybe that's also the case. So
What's your take on the recent shareholder vote with reapproving Elon Musk's compensation plan? Do you think there was some political bent or angle from kind of, this whole judge revoking the
I
plan and all
absolutely
this
do.
stuff, or?
Yeah. I mean, Biden was the governor of Delaware, and I think there's like some email leaked or text with punchers like, I know all the judges in Delaware and I'll get you in trouble, or to someone, he was saying, not about Tesla. So I think the Biden family, they have connections with law firms or whatever, they have connections with judges. And I think they were able to get like the most activist judge they could think of, into the Tesla case. And I have a feeling, I suspect it's sort of like a little bit of lawfare against Elon for, talking so much smack about Biden and the current political administration, calling him like wet sock puppet a number of times. All these ter they have just it's bad blood because of the union alliance, I think, that Biden has versus Tesla and such. So it's unfortunate, but I do think there was some political motivations behind that whole case. And I'm glad they got moved to Texas. I think that's a big win. I did not expect that. I thought what was also interesting about the shareholder vote also was if you saw like the graphs and such, and I put a post on this with Tesla Boomer Mama too, Alexandra, and the Vanguard voting was suspiciously late to me. They have, I think 7% of Tesla. And if you count only like 70 to 75% of voters participating in the vote, that's really like an 11%, 11 or 12% influence on the yes. And that's just voting yes. They could swing it 24% by voting no instead of yes, for example. So I feel like maybe they're waiting to the end, and they have the best tools to see real time with Broadridge what's going on, just like Tesla's investor relations do, and it's Vanguard. So I feel like maybe Vanguard was kind of waiting to the end to see if they could use it as a bargaining chip to get like a seat at the board or something. And it was just high enough where they were like, okay, we're not going to be able to make a difference. We'll just vote for it and just have brownie points with Tesla management then, you know, not ask for anything. I don't know. Maybe there was some behind the room, you know, back of the room, you know, negotiating going on, but it just felt suspicious that Vanguard would wait to the last second. Mm-hmm. Did you think about anything like that?
I guess one other angle would be like maybe Vanguard is just saying, let the shareholders decide and we'll just vote on the side of the shareholders. Like whoever has the most going into the final count, you know, we'll just.
I would like that to be the case. I hope that's the case, but I just know, you know, happy endings aren't always happy endings for the reasons we think, you know?
Yeah. Did you have any kind of backup plan or any contingency plan if the shareholder vote came out negative?
I had some puts. I bought a bunch of short-term, not a bunch, but enough short-term puts where it was like, you know, I was ready in case this doesn't pass. And I felt like the stock had really tanked 30% in the next few days afterwards. So I was surprised the implied volatility of the puts on that, you know, for that week were not higher, to be honest. So I felt like I got a decent deal. I was expecting the implied volatility would be high, like an earnings event or something. And I wasn't going to buy the puts, but when I saw they were low, I was like, oh, I should buy some puts just because if this doesn't pass for some reason, like there's a lot of people that are going to be like very upset and selling shares thinking Elon's going to leave soon. Did you think Elon was going to leave soon? Or did you think the stock was going to go down after if it didn't pass? Or what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I thought through everything and, you know, I felt like if there was a negative vote for some reason, then I thought that who knows what could happen. And it could, you know, there could be a spiral of events, you know, down and trigger all this crazy stuff. But then the more I thought of it, I was like, I just think the next 5 years are going to be very good for Tesla because I think what Elon and the team has set up for Robotaxi, it like it's all pretty much set up. It's like, I don't know if people understand this on like generally, like the general public obviously probably doesn't understand it, but Robotaxi, I think is almost done. Like, and it took a long, long time to get here. And the realization, the fruit of it is going to be over the next 5 years, but that has happened already. It's kind of like when Apple released the first iPhone, it was like done, you know, in a sense that sure, there was a lot of work to do and, you know, they had to put all this stuff and add on the app store and apps and features. And they didn't even have the video camera on it and all this stuff. They had to add a ton of stuff. But when you had the first iPhone, it was like, the next 5 years is done. Meaning you just needed to iterate on that. And you spent so long in all the piece, getting the pieces all together that you secured the next 5 years in a way. And I think with Robotaxi, I'm like, I think Tesla has secured the next 5 years. And I just don't see like them, I don't see how they can drop the ball. I mean, obviously theoretically anything is possible, but I mean, even a Tesla without Elon after 5 years is not great because you're looking at Optimus execution going down. You have people leaving the company, all this stuff. But the next 5 years, so much has been done with Robotaxi that you just need to iterate it and just do what you're doing. And it's going to roll out. And I think it's going to be very, very profitable. So to me, it was more of an issue. If things did spiral, it would be more of a 5+ year, you know, picture. It wouldn't be something that, you know, I think would be.
I agree. Like I wasn't selling any of my long-term shares. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. I was just, I thought, you know, for a small amount, not like relatively, it was a, you know, decent amount of puts, but it could go up a lot. But I also wonder, like, do you think August 8th, do you think if Tesla just unveils like a Tesla network app, and it's basically a competitor to Uber, and Tesla drivers have to sit in the car, even though they let the car drive by itself to collect more data. And they're either Tesla drivers that are, you know, certified or just people that have high enough insurance scores or whatever, where, you know, they're safe and they're watching the road. And it's basically like an Uber competitor. If that's sort of what they unveil, because their next plan is to like have that for like a year before they test it out in any cities, like as a real, you know, driverless robotaxi. Don't you think that this stock is going to, do do you think the stock's going to react well to that? Or I feel like that stock's looking for, like, in the next 6 to 12 months, the stock could be lower than where it is now if that's the case. What
Yeah,
are
I
your
mean,
thoughts?
I don't know if the stock really is gonna like, I mean, it could move based on sentiment in any direction and, 10, 20%, whatever, I don't know. I just think the next year it's driven by more like the margins and
Margins, yeah.
yeah, I mean, margins and growth and profitability, just like things that are basic. If Tesla can turn around their margins and show
Yeah.
that they're going up, then I think the stock will follow that. If they
Yeah.
can't, then it's not. I
Yeah.
like as I talk with you, I'm thinking through a few things, and I think that I wouldn't say that this is definitive, but as Robotaxi Network rolls out, I could see there's a period that is very, very unexpected for Wall Street. And that period is like that period, maybe my guess is between the 2 and 3 year period from now. And the reason why I say that is because maybe in a year, Robotaxi rolls out, maybe sooner or later, I don't know. But then it needs time to get to this place where it gets really, really good, meaning way
Yeah.
better than a human, like 5 times better than a human. Like it's just like you prefer a robotaxi over an Uber driver because it's that
Yeah.
much safer, right? But and it may maybe it might take a little longer than 2 years, I don't know. But at a certain point, once it reaches this like crazy kind of safety level point, and it really becomes like this tipping point where Uber makes no sense anymore to people, to a lot of people, then you're gonna see this crazy adoption. And you're gonna see the revenue show as well. And Tesla just needs to put out another line item, another section in their, P&L statement. It's like Robotaxi Network. They show the profits and they show the margins that they're getting on these profits. And you're
Yeah.
gonna see this thing like just skyrocket quarter over quarter, like over 100%, 200%. It's like 80% margins, crazy margins.
Yeah.
And investors are gonna be, what the heck? It's
Yeah.
just gonna be shocked because you think that the common sense thing is that it's gonna take 10 years for Tesla to, grow their robotaxi network. Like that's what most Wall Street people think. 10 years
Yeah.
if they're lucky, if they're ever gonna grow.
Yeah.
No one is expecting, I think, on Wall Street, or barely anybody is expecting this crazy, like, hockey stick adoption
Yeah.
curve. But
Yeah.
that's the thing. The FSD is this interesting technology where it doesn't get adoption unless it's like maybe 2 times better than a human driver. It doesn't get that hockey stick adoption because
Yeah.
before that it sucks because compared to a human driver you can't use it as like an autonomous driving feature, right? And then once it becomes as good as a human, it's worse than the human in certain things, better than human in certain things. So it's awkward. You don't like it because you don't trust
Yeah.
it, right? So it's
Yeah.
got to be like 2 or 3 times better at least for you to
Yeah.
say, oh, whoa, this is way better. And once it gets to 5 times, it's like undeniable. And that's where
Yeah.
the point where the adoption goes crazy. But technology moves in a way where it's been jumping, doubling, 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 whatever in capabilities, so many doubles. It's just been doing that for so long up until this
Yeah.
point. It just hasn't been to the human level point yet. So once it's getting to this human level point, it's just going to continue the doubling.
Yeah.
Just is
And you mean
the
like human level in terms of feel, like how it feels? Because statistically, I think they're beyond human in terms of safety, right? With those statistics they
no
put out,
no so
isn't
they're
it?
not it's not safer than human yet because their stats are supervised FSD, which like a human has to oversee. Like the stat we're looking for is unsupervised FSD, so FSD
Without
is driving by
interventions.
itself without a human overseeing it at all. Like that's what needs to be way better than a human driver, right? Like
Yeah.
F
Do you think
supervised
that
FSD.
they'll get like a pilot experiment in like Arizona and have it just in Arizona and to Austin, for example, and not go on highways but just around the cities and be completely robotaxi kind of, but at half the cost of Uber and half the cost of Waymo or whatever, and so people will just do it because it's half the cost and no one I mean, they probably wouldn't, you know, any serious in Teslas structurally are so safe that if you're not driving at highway speeds, it seems like extremely hard to have a serious injury from like a robotaxi accident, even. So I feel like, do you think that's a path they take initially here for starting August 8th or?
Yeah, I mean, they could, but like when you look at this idea that the capabilities of a robotaxi, let's say, are doubling every several months, I don't know what that exact timeline is. If it is, and we're approaching getting closer to human safety with unsupervised, we don't have those stats right now. But, and I don't think we are safer than human driving unsupervised yet. It's still,
Unsupervised.
yeah, it still needs to get there. We might need a few more, you know, maybe we might need three or four more doublings or something, you know. But once it gets there, it's just going to be doubling and doubling and doubling in the same kind of, you know, rate as it was before. And so within a year or two, it's going to be like 10 or 20 times better than the human driver. So
That'd be great.
it's going to be so fast that before it's safer than human, it's kind of like, what's the point of a test network? Because it's not great, you know? It's too much liability, basically. So in a way, you want to just wait till it gets better than the human, you know, much better, and you roll it out and it goes crazy. But then there could be a case, and I think Tesla might do it, where they think rolling out the network will iron out a lot of the other things about the network, like the ride hailing, the apps, the logistics, like, you know, all this other stuff that you need to support, right, the software and the network. So I could see possibly they do some type of like monitor, remote control stuff, where I think Waymo has something like that. If a car gets in trouble, it could be remote control. Like, you can have some type of video monitoring, like, you know, see where the car's at. You have some teleoperators just kind of overseeing stuff. They could do a mix of that stuff, you know, and go into some test networks.
I'm going to be a contrarian a little bit to what you were saying. I'm going to say that I think just because I have the experience of driving my Cybertruck without autopilot so much, and then I have the full self-driving and the Model X so much, and I compare and contrast so easily, I do think driving myself is maybe more da maybe I'm not a good driver, I don't know, but I do think driving myself is riskier than having full self-driving going, even if I don't intervene, because all of my interventions have been so far for just things that are uncomfortable. I have not really had any interventions that I can think of that stopped an accident from happening in the last year, you know, since it's gotten, or in the last 6 months since we've had this newer version architecture, you know. So I wonder if maybe Tesla operated in shadow mode, if they already kind of can tell if it passes the human level. Like you're saying, it's not there yet, you don't think, but I'm wondering maybe if it is there, the self-driving without interventions, and if you know, I'm kind of wondering if it is. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, so here's a test.
Okay.
Would you, let's say you're going to Yosemite, okay? I this is a tough test, but you're going to Yosemite. I'll give you $1,000 not to drive and just let FSD. Let's say hypothetically it could work. I'll give you $1,000 to let FSD just drive and you sleep in the back seat. Would you do it?
I sleep in the back seat.
Yeah, you sleep in the back seat. I'll give you $1,000,000. Would you do it?
I don't know. I mean, I would think about it. I would do a smaller test for, if I could do smaller tests and work my way up to it, I would do it. But all the way to Yosemite right off the bat, and definitely not. But if it was just to
Definitely not.
like grocery store down the street, of course I would do it for like $10. I would do it if it was legal.
How about an hour circling the bay, like going into San Francisco down the streets for 30 minutes and coming back to your house?
I'd have to work my way up to it still, I'd say, but I think I could get there. I think I could get there, but I think I'd have to start with smaller drives, you know, sleeping in the back seat, and then I'd work my way up after I saw confidence from those, you
For me, no way. Like,
know.
I think supervised FSD is with like FSD plus the human is way safer than
Oh
human.
yeah,
Like,
that's the safest for
way
sure.
safest. Like,
That's the
because
safest,
it's like combining two powerhouses, right? The human mind and the
Two
software
different
together.
intelligences,
It could be up to like 10 times safer. Who knows what the exact stats are. But FSD with the human sleeping in the backseat of the car, yeah, that's. But here's the thing, it's gonna get there, And once it gets there,
Very soon, yeah.
it's gonna double and double and double at the same rate that it's been doubling for the past, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But if you think about that, the only how could FSC get to this place right now? Like this capability, it's been getting there by doubling, 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 doubling. It's had to do so many doublings. And so there's
Yeah.
a line of improvement that's going on here. And so it's just
Yeah.
riding that. And so
Yeah.
at some point it's gonna cross the tipping point, which is, you know, 2 or 3 times safer than a human driver unsupervised.
Maybe by August 8th.
Yeah.
Maybe by August 8th.
No, I don't think that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, 12.4
Yeah.
is taking too long. But yeah, and I think that could provide the biggest, craziest catalyst to Tesla stock, because it's going to give the revenue and the margins, because you're going to see real user growth,
It probably
real
has to
rev
print on a
usage.
quarterly earnings report, you know, and then
Yeah.
when investors see that, hopefully it might even take 2 quarters in a row of it showing increasing versus investors being skeptical and thinking it's just a blip or something or whatever.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah, I
I it might
think
take a few
worst
it
case,
might
that's
take
worst case.
actually it might take actually several quarters, a year or a year and a half of it
Yeah, you
continuing.
never know.
Like it could
Yeah.
take a while. I mean, you'll see,
Especially
like,
if it starts out small and
yeah,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I wanted to just wrap up and change gears a bit. I know you're
Sure.
into health and fitness a lot. Any changes in your health and kind of fitness routine in the past 6 to 12 months since I've last talked with you?
I definitely I mean, I'm always evolving my view of health. I'm always changing, you know, not changing drastically. One thing is, I do want to like, I do think the low carb, you know, diet is the way to go for me and for a lot of people. And it doesn't mean like no carbs necessarily. It just means like when you have healthy, whether it's vegetables or, you know, stay away from grains. And that, for me personally, like, so I do try to have like, I think the food pyramid is upside down, you know, and I think that's messed a lot of people up, messed me up for years. So I'm still big on that. I still think fasting is a big tool for health. You know, whether it's intermittent fasting or if people can, you know, some people can do multi-day fast, but I think it's a very good cleansing tool with like autophagy and stuff. And you know, I still think exercise, you know, I try to just mix it up. And I found these things called KAATSU bands, KAATSU.
Yeah.
It's like blood flow restriction stuff, but like for me, as I'm getting older, if I try to lift heavy weights, I can like injure myself much more easily or get arthritis in my shoulders. But I feel like using these types of bands, I can lift like half as much weight and I get the same benefit. Like you really burn, you get the same benefit, but you don't get those injuries, you know? So I feel like it's good for people as they age if they want to, you know, stay in shape, I guess. For me, at least, it's been good. And obviously sleep is important. And oh yeah, the Wim Hof, I don't know if you saw my updates on
Yeah.
X, but I got into this, I went to this Wim Hof retreat in Poland for a week this past winter, and it was like amazing. Like I'd never really done the ice baths more than 30 seconds myself before. And you know, every day they build you up, and by the end you're in for 10 minutes in like this ice running water with a waterfall behind you, and like it's like running water, which is worse than just still water, you know, but it was like 35 degrees Fahrenheit. And for 10 minutes, it was like I never thought I could do that, but I did it. So I know I have a tool in my toolbox. I can go in ice water for a couple of minutes. I take a lot of cold showers now. And then the Wim Hof breathing method has, you know, been really helpful for me. I feel like it's made a difference. I've been seeing this longevity doctor for a couple of years that I just ended the relationship with for a while because it was kind of expensive. But you know, you kind of look at, they do all these tests on you to see what's most likely the cause of your demise, you know, physically or mentally or whatever. And so for me, it was like, oh, I could get Alzheimer's at an early age or something, and you got to check on this. And they test like amyloid plaques and stuff. And I was like at moderate risk, nothing too crazy, but it's just like something I have to keep an eye on. And then I was doing the Wim Hof thing regularly every day for like 3 months before they did another test. And they were like, wow, you're tau to amyloid or whatever ratio has went down. We've never seen that. So I feel like there's like a lot of things in health that are misnomers or not understood. And I just think there's a lot to learn. A lot people should kind of self-experiment to see what they think works for them the best over time. And one thing I want to self-experiment with is I do want to try doing like a pure vegan diet for like 60 or 90 days at some point, just to see how it feels. Because I've heard like cycling, between a carnivore heavy versus a vegan heavy diet back and forth can be really helpful for someone's metabolism too. So those are just ideas I'm floating right now for doing at some point. But I'm always curious about health, always listening to various health podcasts and stuff and curious. What about you? Have you learned anything new about health stuff or?
I mean, I gave up low carb about a year ago or a year and a half ago. I forget the exact date. Maybe it was longer. I feel much better, to tell you the truth.
Really?
I was low carb for about 2 or 3 years, but I felt pretty good. But there's something different about, I don't know what it is. It's I got inspiration more from the Korean Japanese diet, where it's actually a high carb diet, but they don't eat a lot of carbs because everything is moderately portioned, and you don't eat snacks in between meals and eat fermented foods and lots of vegetables and all this stuff. So the carbs that you eat, they're not like overboard. I feel like the Western diet, like, chips, bread, cereal,
fried
this,
stuff.
This, like, it's like crazy. It's like overdose in carbs. I don't, to me that, that's going to lead to inflammation and a bunch of problems. But I think, and I think in a way the Western kind of trends right now of low carb and keto and all this stuff could be a reaction to that, the extreme usage of carbs in the Western diet, right? Because if you're in a different society and you're not doing these there people aren't extremely like overdosing on carbs, then maybe you don't see a need to go low carb because, people aren't inflamed and overweight and obese, et cetera, right? As much.
Sure.
And so, I just looking at my own kind of research and stuff, I'm like, I think there's a way to do carbs that's right. And so I've been doing that for probably the past year and a half and I feel great. And then getting into, I did this thing where I got down to my kind of ideal body fat percentage last year, and then keeping it steady, and then trying to get a bit more lean body mass this year by working out and trying to find the right exercises without getting injured too often. It's like, it's crazy. It's like,
you gotta try those katsu bands, man. Try them.
Actually,
I'm telling you,
I got them after I heard it from you, but when I use them, it just doesn't feel right. It just feels like,
I gotta show you how to use them. Maybe I don't know. We gotta
feels,
have a
it
space
feels
time
like,
or something.
It doesn't feel safe to me, man. It just feels like it's like squeezing you, and it's like, is this, I don't know, man. But
that's cool. No, I think I'm always curious to hear your take on stuff too, for sure. I'm just, I always want to be open-minded and try different things, so I definitely want to try this vegan thing at some point and just see what happens, because it's like I've never done vegan before and people love it, but I feel like, I feel like I would do it for 60 days, 90 days and see what happens, and then maybe switch back to a low carb or something, but just see what happened. Maybe I would love it. I'd be like, oh, I'll stay on this for a long time. I don't know.
Sounds good, Emmett. It's great chatting, catching up with you. Hope you have a good summer, and we'll catch up soon, hopefully.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, good chatting. All right.
All right.
Bye.
We'll see you. Bye.